Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on autism when we come back. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. And we've been taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? Or a carpenter? What if your plumber said he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? What if your carpenter said he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client? Doesn't our common sense tell us that a carpenter or a plumber who couldn't fix his own pipes or his own steps is incompetent? Well, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or that carpenter. Now listen to James Nielsen. Nielsen is a professor, a law school professor at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he had to say about it. He said, quote, "It is a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed." And he said it's worse than that. "Most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed, and a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom, without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel, and a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and their clients, it is a cruel hoax." Now, that's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure here, call us at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, that number again, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. Courtroom strategy and procedures available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about autism. And I showed you last time that you're never going to have a connecting link between mercury or thimerosal and autism. And the reason for that is the money involved. I mean, we're talking about so many hundreds of billions of dollars that it would dwarf the tobacco industry settlement. So they had to come up with a plan. And so I showed you last time, the plan is genius. Genius. You know, I got to take my hat off to whoever it was that sat down and said, listen, in order to get the pharmaceutical industry off the hook for this thimerosal autism problem, you got to hand it to this guy. Because whoever it was that was sitting in the office, sitting around the conference table, came up with sheer genius. He said, what we'll do is we'll take thimerosal out of the vaccines. And when he made that statement, I could just hear it now. The rest of the lawyers in the room just came unhinged and said, oh my God, that's the last thing we can do. We can't do that, because if we do that, it would prove that thimerosal is the cause. And he said, now relax, relax. Let me show you how the rest of the story works. He went on and said, What we'll do is we'll take thimerosal out of all of the common vaccines. But we won't take the thimerosal out of the new vaccines coming into the marketplace. And we will increase the dosage of thimerosal in those few vaccines. So the child's getting 35 vaccines. We will take the thimerosal out of 20, 25, or 30, but we'll leave it in 5, 10, or 15 so that the dosage never changes. Therefore, the autism rate will never go down. It will only go up. At the same time, we will put out disinformation. We will suggest that autism is caused by these six other potential causes, that it may be genetic, it may be environmental, it may be parental practices, or irregularities in the brain, or abnormal levels of serotonin, abnormal neurotransmitters in the brain. And we will conspicuously, we will not mention thimerosal, but we will take it out. Then, when autism rates continue to climb, year after year, we will say, but we took thimerosal out of the vaccines, which is proof positive that thimerosal never caused this problem. We don't know what did cause it, but now we know what didn't cause it. And they will never go to Nepal or Tibet or to the Amazon rainforest and take a look at populations of people that don't practice vaccination. And the people will buy it. They'll love it. And they will have sold another disease, another money-making disease with all of the therapies that go along with it. Now listen, disease is a big moneymaker. I've reported to you in the past on cancer. Got 10 cures to cancer. Do you know that? Cancer is one of the more easily cured diseases, and 8 of the cures to cancer were developed by allopathic medical doctors. The regular Joe Sixpack medical doctor down here at the local hospital. 8 out of the 10. All discovered. But they have been buried, and that's because cancer is a $500 billion a year industry. Oh, God. Ladies and gentlemen, if we obliterated cancer, do you know what would happen to the American economy? It would crash like a lead balloon. You can't take $500 billion out of the economy. Why, all of the oncologists and all of the cancer institutes and all of the people that are employed in the hospitals and in the doctor's offices and so on and all of the support centers would suddenly be unemployed and have to go to work. It would cause unemployment. It would cause such a disruption in the economy that it would collapse. You'll never find a cure to cancer. I don't care if you live to be 110. It doesn't make any difference if you up the spending from $5 billion a year to $50 billion a year for the next 500 years. Never find a cure to cancer. And you're never going to find a cure to autism either. Now, for Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife down here at the bottom of the ladder, there's a cause for autism and there's a cure for it. That's how simple that is. And if you want to know what it is, then let's start working together and let's put two and two together and let's figure it out, and then let's solve that problem. Best thing to do is don't get autism. Best thing to do is don't get vaccinated. Best thing to do is stop practicing witchcraft. The best thing to do is obey God and keep His commandments, and especially the Ten Commandments. Now, if we'd do that, we'd have a whole lot less problem. Now, if you just can't do that, you just can't bring yourself to practicing the Ten Commandments, and you can't give up on vaccinations, well, then the next best thing is make sure that the vaccines do not have any thimerosal in them. And I told you last time about this story. I'm going to tell it one more time because it's very important. I had a guy here, a student, who believes in vaccines. And after all, 89% of the American public believes in vaccines. It's like baptism and communion. I mean, you know, there's religious people out there, they can't give up baptism. They can't give up communion. Well, okay. If you have to have these vaccines, then this guy went into the doctor and he said, now listen, I want to vaccinate my kid, but I don't want any thimerosal. And so the pediatrician said, okay, I will order the vaccines without the thimerosal. This is terrific. So when the day came, he took his kid in to have him vaccinated. And then this guy, being from Missouri, now he said, let me see the vial before you shoot my kid up. And they pulled the package out, and the package contained thimerosal in the vaccines. Now the doctor then apologized and said, but I ordered non-thimerosal. Okay, well, maybe he did. I don't know. We'll give the doctor the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he did. But you see, the Health and Human Services Department, back in 99, you know, they said, look, you can use up the vaccines that you've got on hand in stock with the thimerosal in them. That's to prevent Merck and Pfizer and all the pharmaceutical companies from losing any money on vaccines they got to throw away. I mean, we wouldn't want that, would we? So whether they're just using up the old vaccines or whether or not, you see, many of the vaccines, now they're shooting your kid up with 35 now, 35. And they haven't taken the thimerosal out of all 35, just taken it out of a bunch. I don't know how many. I can't report to you and say it's 15, 20, 25, or 30. But I can report to you that they have upped the amount of thimerosal in the remaining vaccines to make sure that the overall dosage for the average American child remains higher, not lower, but higher than it was in 1999. That's to guarantee that autism will continue to grow. Now, these people know what causes autism today. You can rest assured that the CDC and the FDA and the pharmaceutical companies know, just like the tobacco companies knew about the addictive qualities of nicotine and tobacco. They denied it, but they knew. Now, that's part of the genius of this whole scheme. We know, and therefore we're going to take evasive action, and they've been taking evasive action now for 8 years. And their evasive action is working like a shot. Now, this is also a stimulus to the economy, because it's going to guarantee that there are going to be more and more special education programs in the future. And it's going to guarantee that we now have a new disease, autism, which is totally unexplained, like AIDS. We don't, you know, AIDS is, we can't cure it, but we can treat it. And the treatment for AIDS now is $100,000 a year here in the West, $8,000 a year for everybody else in the world. Now, why it is that we can't get the same drugs that we use here in the United States for $8,000 like they do in India, that's a good question, isn't it? Let's take a look at education here. Access to free, quality education is the key to the uniquely American promise of equal opportunity for all. This promise was formally extended to children with disabilities with the passage of the 1975 landmark federal legislation now known as the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. The public schools across the country today serve more than 6 million children with a wide array of disabling conditions. Well, let's see, there's 50 million children in the public schools, so 12% of them, a little more than 1 out of 10, 12% have a disability. They've got ADHD, they've got autism, they're in a wheelchair, they've got muscular dystrophy, multiple sclerosis, they got something wrong with them. I remember when I went to school, there was one girl there that had her arm in a plastic sling. It's the only kid I knew of with a disability. Oh, I'll take that back. There was a second kid there. He had cerebral palsy. And Danny was his name, and Danny didn't go to school full time. He only went to ag class. He went to agriculture class with us and went on field trips with us, but he was disabled, and you know, he could get around, he could walk, you know, a little bit. But here's a class of 305 students, and there was only two that were disabled that I can remember off the top of my head. Let's assume that there was three or four more. Listen, today it's 12%. 12% nationwide are disabled. Now, ever since its initial enactment, the federal law has included a commitment to pay 40% of the average per student cost for every special education student. The current average per student cost is $7,552. So we're spending $7,500 to educate a child in public school, on average. Now, the special education student is 16,921, or more than double. It's actually 224% more. So in 2004, the federal government is providing local school districts with just under 20% of its commitment rather than the 40% specified by the law, creating a $10.6 billion shortfall for states and local school districts. So your state and local school districts have to pick up the difference, and this is where your taxes are going up at the local level. It's to pick up for these special education students. Now, this is just a monetary windfall. I mean, this is big business. Because picture this. Let's suppose you're the principal of a school. And on average, it costs $7,500 to educate a student in the school. But along comes a kid over here with autism. And all of a sudden, you can put him on the rolls and say, hey, listen, this kid's got autism, this kid's got ADHD, this kid's got this special need, and we got to have more money. And whatever it costs, the local school district has to pony up the money. And whatever it costs, the local taxpayers have to pony up the money, because they just raise the tax to whatever it is that they need to spend. And if you don't like it, just sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and do what you're told. So this is big business, and this is a windfall now to the school districts. While it's true the federal government isn't picking up their share, that doesn't mean that the children aren't being cared for, the money isn't being spent. It's being spent by the state and local districts. That's what the bottom line is. Well, isn't that just real special? Thought you'd love that one. Now, let's take a look at the cumulative growth in autism cases by state. So if you take a look at the states, Ohio, and you take a look at the increase in autism, it's 23,291%. Nevada is second with 17,720%. Wisconsin third at 16,000. Maryland at 12,000. And it goes on down here to where, you know, the Virgin Islands, U.S. Virgin Islands, it only went up 40%. Now, the weighted average, that is, if you average all of the averages out, is 2,559.8% increase over the period. Now, I don't know what the test period is here. Now, they've got percent cumulative growth in autism cases among children ages 6 to 22 beginning in the year 2003. Source, fighting autism by way of state. And to see also listed the state's health profile. So if you'd like to have these statistics, it's www.statemaster.com. www.statemaster.com. Those are pretty startling numbers over there. The rate of increase now is in the thousands of percent. Now, of course, that could be, you know, one autism case double to two is 100% increase, but it's still only two kids. Now, we're only talking about one in 150 in the general population. Let's see if we had 300 million. That's one in 150. That's got to go a couple more zero. 300 million. Now, let's divide that by 150, and that would give us 2 million. So we have 2 million people in the United States with autism today, growing at the rate of 17% a year. So if we just go times 0.17, next year there's going to be 340,000 new cases of autism. 340,000 new cases in 2008. Probably 2007 will probably show up with about 340,000. Now, then you'll have 2,340,000. Then take 17% of that number, and then add that to the cumulative amount. And then take 17% of that number. What boils down to is that the number of children with autism doubles every 4 years. So if you got 2 million today, you know, and 4 years from now you're going to have 4 million, and then 8 years from now you're going to have 8 million, and then 16 years from now you're going to have... 4 years after that, you'll have 16 million. 4 years after that, 32 million. 4 years after that, 64 million. You know, it won't take very long until we got everybody in the country infected, you know, not infected, but suffering from autism. Now, it never works out that way, because there's a point in time when it's going to peak. And I don't know whether it's going to be that people are going to quit getting vaccinated, or they're going to have so many people that are so sick with autism that they can't afford it, or I don't know. Something's going to happen. But it's going to grow. And it's not going to go down because the powers that be are putting the same stuff into the vaccines. Now, if you're still not persuaded that it's the vaccines that cause it, well, hell, take your kid out and get him shot up. I mean, if 35 shots with thimerosal is good, 70 shots ought to be twice as good. It's got to be. It's got to be. And the vaccine numbers now have gone up. When I was a kid, I don't know what the number was, 4 or 5. My old granny used to say, if God had intended for you to have vaccination, see, you would have been born with a needle sticking out of your arm so they could just hook up the syringe to it. And she was a little suspicious about that, and so she protected me from vaccines. This is an old lady back during World War II when all of the children had their tonsils and adenoids taken out, just as routine. Their vestibular organs, and we don't need them anymore. My old granny said, if God had intended for you to live without tonsils and adenoid, he would have created you without tonsils and adenoids. So she protected me, and she made sure. I'm one of the few people around. You know, you ask people, have you got your tonsils? No. Have you got your adenoids? No. Oh, you have to have them taken out? Yeah. Yeah. And these people, they're living their lives and they're, you know, just doing their things. But the tonsils and adenoids are important parts of your immune system. See, now we know what they're for. See, back in the 30s and 40s and 50s, we didn't know what the hell they were for. And we'd been sold evolution, and so evolution says, well, if we're not using them anymore, we don't need them. And so when medical science said, we don't know what they're for, so therefore they must not be needed, and so therefore we'll cut them out. Now we found out that that's a part of an integrated system in your body called your immune system. And when you cut those two pieces out, your immune system's impaired. Oh, gee, what does that cause? I don't know. But it can't be good. It sure as hell can't be any better. Now, I'm pushing 70, and I'm still in good health. I'm not wearing glasses, and I don't have a hearing aid, and I'm still able to go out. And I got to go out and castrate 3 calves this morning. When I get through with this program, I'm going out and take on 3 calves, and I'm sure that a couple of them are going to knock me down, roll me around in the dirt, because, you know, they get a little uppity, you know, when you get real personal, up close and personal like that. And I'm sure, and I'll bet you, and I'll be on the air again tomorrow. And so, you know, I'm still in pretty good health, not near as good as I was when I was 30, but, you know, still not too shabby. And never had a shot. And I avoid vaccines and vaccinations like AIDS, herpes, and VD. So I'd like to suggest that maybe you consider that if you haven't considered it. I'd like to suggest to you that you consider the thimerosal. I mean, you know, just in case. Now, I reported to you last time, I said, now listen, that thimerosal over there has 76 symptoms from autism victims that match perfectly with the same 76 systems in the physician's desk reference on mercury poisoning. Boy, that's a coincidence. When you get 76 that match up with another 76, I don't know what the statistical odds are, but you'd have to write a number with so many zeros after it that my little sharp EL1197 would choke up in about the first 5 numbers. I mean, we're talking about bunches. The chances of that happening? Why, I think you could evolve from green slime. I think you could send a tornado through a junkyard and have it turn out a 747 or 2 or 3 before you'd have numbers like that come out again. But anyway, you know, you decide what you want to do. Now, I'm going to go back over here to the balance of another document here that I got for you. This is a government document now, www.ninds.nih. That's the National Institute of Health.gov, called Disorders, Autism Detail. Now, here's the straight party line. These are the people that say that scientists aren't certain what causes autism, but it's likely that both genetics and environment play a role. So what role does inheritance play? Well, they tell us a recent study strongly suggests that some people have a genetic predisposition to autism. In families with one autistic child, the risk of having a second child with the disorder is approximately 5%, or about 1 in 20. This is greater than the risk for the general population. Researchers are looking for clues about which genes contribute to this increased susceptibility. In some cases, parents and other relatives of an autistic child show mild impairments in social and communicative skills or engage in repetitive behaviors. So it could be grandparents or parents that have traces of autism themselves. Caused by what? Where'd they get it? Hey, kids, we didn't even hear the word autism until 1943. But boy, we've all been vaccinated since 1943, haven't we? Now, evidence also suggests that some emotional disorders, such as manic depression, occur more frequently than average in the families of people with autism. All right, so there's a rabbit trail for you to go down. Genetic predisposition. Okay, then we got, do symptoms of autism change over time? Well, for many children, autism symptoms improve with treatment and with age. Some children with autism grow up to lead normal or near normal lives, and children whose language skills regress early in life, usually before the age of 3, appear to be at risk of developing epilepsy or seizure-like brain activity. During adolescence, some children with autism may become depressed or experience behavioral problems, and parents of these children should be ready to adjust treatment for their child as needed. I'll tell you a little story over here. We had a grandchild here, and she was born to a crack mother. This woman, when she was pregnant with our granddaughter, she was on crack cocaine, heroin, and methamphetamines and marijuana. I mean, if there was an illegal, and probably some over-the-counter drugs, I imagine that this girl could have got anything that she could stick in her mouth, she would have done it. And so when the baby was born, we were kind of concerned, and of course the daddy of the baby was a little concerned that, well, maybe there was some excessive use of drugs here, illegal drugs. And so my wife suggested that they put the baby on barley green. Now, here's a little trick that maybe you had never heard before. You see, when a baby is first born, you know, in a brain, the baby's brain, it isn't convoluted with all of those curves and all of those indentations. It's pretty straight. So the barley green will go into the baby's brain, and it will attach to, and it will remove that those drug residues that go through the placenta, the brain blood barrier, and the placenta barrier. And so that child today has above average intelligence. Now, if you'd asked me 18 years ago, I'd have said, well, that kid's probably going to show up to be a mentally retarded child. And in the first 6 weeks, well, the child was 6 weeks old. You know, up until the child is, you know, I don't know, a year or two old, you can go to work with that barley green. Now, there's other herbs that you can use to detoxify. Mercury is a heavy metal, and you can get that heavy metal out of your body. It's called chelation. And, you know, if you've got a child with autism, have you considered, have you thought about, did anybody ever suggest to you that maybe you get that mercury out of that child? I know it's a wild idea, but if the mercury is causing these symptoms, has it ever occurred to anybody that if you could get that mercury out of your body, that maybe those symptoms might improve or go away? So now I can't recommend this, and I can't prescribe it, and I can't diagnose, because see, you got to be a medical doctor to do that. But I was just suggesting, you know, as one parent to another, just, you know, as one guy to another, exercising free speech, that, you know, that's a thought. You know, just kind of a thought. It's kind of like saying, gee, you know, if you wanted to find out whether or not thimerosal caused autism, why don't you go to a population of people that aren't vaccinated and take a look at them? That's what we do with the Mormons. See, you take a look at people that have cancer, heart attack, stroke, and one thing and another. Then you go to a population of people that don't ingest things like nicotine, caffeine, alcohol, and drugs. And the Mormons kind of fit that bill, and the Adventists. And so you take a look at Mormons and Adventists and compare them to the general population, and they live longer, and they don't have as many degenerative diseases. Isn't that surprising, all you Mormon people out there, if you are wondering, I wonder what benefit I get from not drinking Coca-Cola. You live about 6 years longer than the average. That's the benefit. What benefit do I get by not drinking coffee and caffeine? Well, there's about, 20 diseases, 20 symptomatic diseases that you get from drinking too much caffeine. I just did a program on caffeine just recently. It's called Caffeine Blues. Look it up on the webpage here. Just go to our webpage and look up Caffeine Blues, and there's a little story. That's what you Mormons get for not drinking coffee. I know it's a small consolation prize, but you know you get less disease and you live longer and you're happier and probably in the process. I've never met very many happy sick people. All the sick people I ever met were miserable, dejected, they didn't smile, they didn't laugh very much, they're feeling real bad, complained about pains and aches and one thing and another. I've never met anybody that was sick that was happy. And I've been here a long time looking for my first one. If you know of a happy sick person, write me an email. Would you let me know what their secret is? All right, while we're mulling that one over for a minute here, let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. And if you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through our website as well. And The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to endorse and recommend the Law Hour and editorial review. And there's a good reason for that, and that is that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile. They could be political. Sometimes they're religious or economic. They can be sectarian. They can be racial or ethnic partisans. And their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review, and sometimes that causes hard feelings. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please visit our website at georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Subject matter is autism. Now, autism, how do you treat it? There's no cure for autism. Ah, shucks. That's like saying there's no cure for diabetes. Yeah, there is. There's no cure for cancer. Yeah, there is. Now, it may well be true that the people who wrote this article, that is www.ninds.nationalinstitutesofhealth.government, don't know how to cure it. But just because somebody else doesn't know how doesn't mean that somebody else doesn't know how. I mean, there's lots of people out here that are ignorant. Always like this old story came from a guy by the name of Kent Hovind. And I get this quite often. You know, somebody calls up and says, just who in the hell do you think you are? They ask me that. Just who in the hell do you think you are? And there's no doubt in my mind. I know exactly who I am. And what they're doing is they're starting off in their email or their letter or their phone conversation with a challenge. You know, they're sitting there saying, you can't know more than the American Medical Association. You can't know more than the American Bar Association. You can't know more than all of the paid professionals out here. So let me start off the dialogue here by saying I've never claimed to know more. Never did claim to know more than the medical doctors, the lawyers of America, the Supreme Court. I've always tried to be as humble as possible and concede that I probably know a hell of a lot less than the medical profession. I know a lot less than the average lawyer out there. I'll concede that all you lawyers out there, twice as smart as I am. But let me start the conversation off this way. Do you people out there with letters after your names make the claim that you know everything? I mean, if you're a lawyer listening to me right now, do you claim to know everything there is to know about law? If you're a doctor right now, do you claim to know everything that there is to know about medicine or health? Because if you do, you got your head right smack dab up, you know where. And you know it as well as I do. So now that you have made the admission, well, no, I don't know everything about my profession or my discipline or about everything that there is to know about. Okay. Let me ask you the second question. You know where I'm going now, all you lawyers. Do you know half of everything that there is to know about the law? Do you know half of everything that there is to know about medicine? Do you know half of everything that there is to be known out there? And if your answer to that is yes, I know half of the law or I know half of medicine, again, let me say to you that you have your head right square up the middle of you know where. Now that I've got these two key admissions out of you, you paid professionals now, you would admit now, would you not, that you do not know half of everything there is to know. Granted, you're a hell of a lot more knowledgeable than I am. You know 10 times more than George Gordon, but you don't know half of everything there is to know. My question to you is, could it be that what I am revealing to you comes out of that one half that you admit that you do not know? Now, I wished I'd have thought of that, but I didn't. Kent Hovind thought of that. And I listened to that guy and I said, now there is some real wisdom coming out of that man's mouth. Kent Hovind. Got to give credit where credit's due. Otherwise, he'll be sitting there saying, well, that dirty Gordon, he just plagiarizing all of my neat sayings. And I think that is a very wise statement. Now, it is true that I don't know everything, but I do spend a lot of time researching, and I want to tell you that there is something you can do about autism. There's a cure for it, and that cure is contained in the Bible. It's contained in the Scripture, believe it or not. Now, that being the case, and most of you being prejudiced against the Bible and against God, you're not going to avail yourself of the information. So, again, you know, it's no skin off my back. I don't care. You're not going to offend me. You're not hearing me saying, oh, please, won't you please call today? Call now. Don't let another day go by until you call me so I can tell you how to solve your problem. No. You see, autism is a punishment that you are receiving for the violation of a law. You people are being punished. That was the first words out of my mouth in program number 1. far be it from me to come over here and butt in to your relationship between God Almighty and yourself concerning health and autism. Far be it from little Georgie Gordon to butt in where he's not wanted. However, once in a while you'll run across some guy that wakes up and says, you know, I didn't know that, and if I had known that, I wouldn't have done that. And there might be two or three of you people out there that, you know, might come to the conclusion that, hey, listen, I didn't know that, and I'm just sorry as hell that came about. I'm sorry as hell I'm being punished for this. I didn't even know I broke a law. I didn't even know that I did something. But if I knew what it was, I'd quit doing it. Now, for the two or three of you out there, you might want to think about calling and saying, hey, listen, is there something that can be done at this late date? And the answer is, yep, there is. So, let me go back here now to autism. Now, they say now here, this is the National Institute of Health, there is no cure for autism. I take exception to that. Therapies and behavioral interventions are designed to remedy specific symptoms and can bring about substantial improvement. That's true. The ideal treatment plan coordinates therapies and interventions that target the core symptoms of autism. Now, let's think about this for a minute. The reason that autism victims get better over time is because there comes a point in time at about age 5 when you quit shooting all of this poison into the kid. Then his immune system takes over and takes that poison and starts moving it around in his body. Over time, the immune system in your body will take the mercury that's screwing up the neural connectors in your brain and move it down into some fat tissue around your belly button, and then there will be improvements made. I just threw out here a few minutes ago, I said, why don't you go to work on getting rid of all the mercury in this kid's body? And the sooner you can get rid of it, then the more improvement this kid's going to have. You know, assuming, of course. Now, if we have to assume. Now, the paid professionals tell us that mercury doesn't cause this malady. It's just genetic, or it's parental practices, or it's environmental. I'm just throwing out this idea to you that, you know, whatever's causing it, if you could eliminate that, and if you came to the conclusion that maybe, just maybe, maybe there's some connection between the thimerosal. Not much of a connection, but just a little bit. Maybe if we could get rid of some of that, there might be some improvement. Okay, well, now there's some tried and tested, proven processes by which we can get that mercury out of your kid's body. And he will improve. Now, if you don't do anything at all, he'll improve also, because his immune system will move that mercury out of certain key areas of his body and store it in his fat. And the best thing you can do is don't put the mercury in there to start with. I haven't heard of anybody that's suffering from a mercury deficiency. If you've got any mercury in your body, you probably got more than you need. It isn't like iodine and potassium, you know, that needs to be replaced every once in a while. And if you're suffering from a mercury deficiency, you know you're going to have some kind of a terrible symptom. Mercury is not one of those metals that you need. And if it is, you got plenty of it. Just go eat a can of tuna fish and you'll get all the mercury you need. You know, as a trace element. If you're concerned about a mercury deficiency, go eat a can of tuna fish. Now, for the rest of us out here, I think we're trying to avoid this mercury. And if you got mercury fillings in your mouth, that's not too good for you either. In fact, you might want to consider getting those out. You know, there's quite a little body of knowledge on this mercury in your mouth too. So, impaired social interaction, problems with verbal and nonverbal communication, and obsessive or repetitive routines and interests, these can all be treated. And most professionals agree that the earlier the intervention, the better. So, here's another thing that they're doing here. See, you got a kid that's 3 years old, and you notice that this kid's got this disorder, autism. So, you go to work on him right away. And so what you're trying to do is to rewire around the damaged neural connectors in the brain. Now, we had a son here that had this very same thing, the very same malady happened to him. Let me describe this for you. The kid's 10 years old. He gets hit by a pickup truck and drug about 150 feet. The kid is pronounced dead on arrival at the hospital. They go to work on him and they resuscitate him. if you can believe it. They actually resuscitated him. But because he hadn't been breathing for a while, he had some deterioration in his brain. You know, they'll do this. Every once in a while, a kid drowns, you know, and he's been in the water 30 minutes. They bring him out and they resuscitate him. And he's got brain damage. Well, that's what happened to our boy Dirk, the brain damage. So he was 10 years old. Now he had certain cognitive mileposts that he had reached. He knew all of his times tables by the time he was 10 years old. He knew that 12 times 12 was 144. 8 times 8 is 64, and so on. But after the accident, and after he was discharged from the hospital, he couldn't remember any of his multiplication tables. None. They were gone. Wiped out. And that wasn't all. He lost a lot of his speech, a lot of words that he knew. He couldn't remember anymore. And he had lost a lot of his memory. You know, things that he knew and remembered and talked about, you know, prior to the accident, he couldn't remember after the accident. Now, those kinds of things are gone and gone forever. So my wife went to work on him in homeschooling here. She said, I'm not going to let this drag him down. In other words, here he was in the fourth or fifth grade. I think he was up about fifth grade. And all of a sudden, he is knocked down to about the second or third grade level. I mean, his math was about second or third grade, his vocabulary, his speech. So she went to work. And she taught him his multiplication tables and all. Now, these brain cells in his brain are gone. They're dead. They're whatever happened to them, they're gone. But your brain will rewire around that. And she did that. She rewired around that by reteaching him. And in about 2 years' time, she brought him back up to speed. And you can do the same thing here with this mental retardation, you know, caused by. Now, mental retardation has other causes. But, you know, if you've got a heavy metal in your body here and it's caused this mental retardation, if we could get this heavy metal out and then go to work, we could wire around that. Now, that's pretty well known. You know, that's been around for a long time. It isn't something that's brand new. So, another thing for you to think about. Now, educational behavioral interventions. Now, therapists use highly structured and intensive skill-oriented training sessions to help children develop social and language skills. Family counseling for the parents and siblings of children with autism often helps families cope with the particular challenges of living with an autistic child. Medications. Doctors often prescribe an antidepressant medication to handle symptoms of anxiety, depression, or obsessive compulsive disorder. Antipsychotic medications are used to treat severe behavioral problems. Seizures can be treated. Now, our boy Dirk has had seizures, epileptic seizures. And that's routine. That happens quite often after a severe traumatic injury. And this mercury toxicity, epileptic seizures, very common. And so doctors, they treat this epilepsy with drugs. See, now let me throw out a brand new idea. Let's assume that it's the mercury that's causing these seizures, mercury causing this debility over here. And now let's remove all of the mercury from this kid's body. And then let's go to work to re-educate this child to what he should have learned or could have learned and didn't learn in the past. You suppose maybe that might be an avenue to explore. I know it's kind of a wild new concept, but you know your kid's already got autism over here. Can't hurt, can it? And let's suppose that his mercury level is pretty high. Let's suppose you got rid of all the mercury. Would you contend with me that the mercury is necessary and imperative for my child's future development? Because if that's your position, well, then you can forget this. This isn't going to help any. Our thinking here is, and this is the National Autism Association, they think that this mercury in here is the cause of the problem. And I'm just walking in here as a farmer saying, if I had a cow over here that was down, you know, with milk fever, I'd say, what caused this? I guess maybe we need to do whatever it was we did in reverse order to reverse out this problem. That's the way we deal with livestock, you know. We take a look at what kind of a deficiency caused this, and then we give them whatever they're deficient. And then we take a look, and if they've been, you know, sometimes an animal get down here and they'll get into something toxic. And then right away we say, how do we get rid of that toxicity in that animal? And then when we're successful, the animal revives and we don't have a problem. I kind of figured, you know, that if my cows can revive, probably your kid could. Now there's other therapies. There's a number of controversial therapies or interventions available for autistic children, but few, if any, are supported by scientific studies. Yeah, that's what I'm suggesting here. We don't have any scientific studies. And that's because the people that are the scientists out here say, we don't know what causes this. Remember, I told you that. It says right here, scientists aren't certain what causes autism. They could be certain and they could figure it out in 90 days or less. They don't want to know. Kent Hovind, he was on one of his tapes over here, and he said, these people are dumb. And they are dumb on purpose. Dumb on purpose. Citing from the scripture. Where there's a scripture, I think it was Peter, said, you know, these people are ignorant. They are willingly ignorant, is the citation. That's the scripture. And Coven, he interpreted that willingly ignorant is dumb on purpose. And that's exactly what we're dealing with here. They're dumb on purpose. Now, let's take global warming as an illustration. Now, this global warming, you know, the scientists, they come along and they say, well, here's what's causing global warming. It's too much coal being burned. Now, I'm going to come along and tell you, let me tell you what's causing global warming. It's God Almighty that's causing global warming. Notice the long pregnant pause. That's so that can kind of sink in. I wanted to tell you, you know, in Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26, God said, I'm going to turn your heaven to iron, and I'm going to turn your earth to brass, because you gave me the finger. And now you're probably sitting out there saying, when did I give God the finger? Last Saturday, when you refused or failed to keep the Sabbath. When you took your kid down, had him shot up with all these vaccines and practiced witchcraft. Now, oftentimes people practice witchcraft and don't know it, but all of you people that are practicing witchcraft on Halloween are willingly ignorant and you're dumb on purpose, and you know full well that that's witchcraft and you're encouraging your children to practice it. And then when your kid comes down with some malady, or like in the Los Angeles Basin, here's a neat number, just saw this yesterday, came across the wire. So far this year, Los Angeles has had 3.25, that's 3.25 inches of rain. It's the lowest rainfall in recorded history in the Los Angeles Basin. Hell, Tucson, Arizona's in a desert and gets more rain than that. I looked at that and I said, okay, well, here comes that heaven to iron and earth to brass story. And so I thought I'd report that to you and say, well, look, now, if you people want to know why you got drought out there, it's because you've been giving the creator of the universe the finger. I mean, you know, I'm aware that your God's a nice guy and that your God is a gentle God, and he's a kinder and gentler God, and he's a loving God and so on. But I wanted to report to you on the God of the Bible, the God of the Hebrews, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who says he is a jealous God. And doesn't have any tolerance for sodomy at all. Zero. And says they all ought to be stoned to death. That's the God I wanted to report to you on. This is the God that says, I'm gonna stricken or strike your children down with diseases over here that you never heard of before. And autism is just one of them. There's ADHD is another. And there's a number of others, you know, that we never heard of. Not contagious bug-carrying diseases, but I'm talking about maladies over here like Lou Gehrig's disease. And he says, I'm going to punish you people. I'm going to punish you with diseases. That's just one punishment. Another punishment is, I'm going to punish you with drought. And that drought then leads to fire. So you got wildfires up there at Lake Tahoe, and it burned up 300 houses up there. And those people that live in those 300 houses are sitting there crying. I saw them on the news the other night, and this lady was crying. Lady, I would cry. If my house burned down, I would cry. It's not surprising that people cry when their houses burn down. But I wanted to tell you the reason your house burned down is because you didn't keep the Sabbath, you don't practice the Ten Commandments, you gave God the finger, you won't do a damn thing he tells you. And so he's warned you in advance. Now, I told you 3,100 years ago, here's what I'm going to do to you if you give me the finger. And so you've been giving him the finger, and your preacher, you go to church every Sunday, and your preacher isn't telling you what's happening and why. There's global warming. I don't deny it. Global warming may actually be caused in part by burning too much coal. But global warming is not caused by coal. Global warming is caused by sunspots on the sun. And the level of sunspot activity has been going up over the past decade or two. And it's causing a higher level of heat on planet Earth, which is melting the ice caps and changing our weather. We call it El Niño. Okay. I call it punishment from God, and it's detailed. In case you wanted to check me out, it's detailed in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. So that's the purpose for my report here, is to give you another view. I know Katie Couric is a nice lady, and when you listen to Katie, and she's reporting on autism, she has real empathy. And your preacher, when he comes over and says, "Oh, Martha, I am so sorry to hear that Bob died." I mean, I've heard these preachers. I mean, these guys are real paid professionals. Doctors have real empathy. But, you know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a preacher. I'm a plumber by trade. I'm a farmer by vocation, and I'm just here to tell you there's an answer to the riddle. There's an answer to the problem. So I'm here to report that answer to you. Now, what research is being done? Well, the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke, called NINDS, is one of the federal government's leading supporters of biomedical research on brain and nervous system disorders. Biomedical. What we're interested in is a drug. If we can find a drug that'll cure autism, boy, we want to sell it to you in a heartbeat. Well, I don't think you're going to find a drug that'll do it, but there'll be some drugs on the market. In fact, they've got drugs right now that they're giving to your autistic child. These drugs are plugging up his neuroconnectors right along with the mercury. I just thought I'd share with you that it's probably not going to help. It's probably going to hurt. But in the overall long run, your child's immune system will overcome both the drugs and the mercury, you know, unless you put too much in. Unless you put in too much. So when God designed your immune system, he did a pretty good job, but it isn't perfect, you know. I mean, it isn't going to overcome all that mercury you're plugging into your kid with those 35 vaccines. Now, you can overcome God's immune system if you put your mind to it, and that's what's happened. I'm about out of time again. I'm going to have to remind you that we got to shut it off right about here and tell you that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information, just call the law school at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us and ask for that free general law CD package at the same time. The telephone number is 417-273-4967. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.